Have you ever wanted to learn a new language, but just didn't have the time or money? I may have a solution for you. Her name is Jessica, and she gives free Chinese lessons daily at 11 p.m. Beijing time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chinese is fun and easy if you have the right teacher. Let Jessica be that teacher and introduce yourself to the fastest growing language in the international job market today at tinyurl.com/tcjessica and tell her Ian sent you.
Do you like fine art but think it might be out of your price range? Do you have a vision for a painting that you'd like to see brought to life but you just don't have the skill? I might have a solution for you. Art by Daisy. With decades of experience, Daisy offers high-quality, affordable watercolor paintings suitable for hanging in your home, office, or even as a gift. With prices starting at just $55, visit tinyurl.com/artbydaisy to find out more. Hello and welcome to the DevCast. I am your host, author, and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our third look at the life and crimes of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. Before we get into it, as always, I have the normal show notes. If you would like to follow the show on social media, you can find me on most social media platforms under either the DevCast, DevCast Official, or DevCast Pod. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to your favorite podcast app and leave a 5-star review. Follow the show as well as share it on social media. And lastly, you can go to tinyurl.com/DCastPatreon, where for as little as $2 a month, you can get early access to ad-free episodes along with exclusive content. And as always, I must give a shout out to my first two Patreon members, Channel and Anthony. As always, thank you guys so much. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair, kick back, relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. We left off last week with Cricket having left Leonard Lake. Charles is in Leavenworth State Federal Prison. And Lake is basically trolling the Bay Area looking for women. Now, at one point, he showed up at his mother's house, and it appeared to the family as though he was going to try and reconcile things between he and his brother Donald. Lake shows up and lets his family know that there's a job opening up north and that Donald would more likely than not be the perfect person for this position. Now, the family was a little bit apprehensive because, as we've discussed, Leonard had open disdain for individuals with disabilities who drew Social Security, and this was no more evident than in his comments and treatment of his younger brother, Donald. However, because Lake was so charismatic and able to mask his real personality, the family acquiesced to this idea. Donald was, by all accounts, extremely enthusiastic to go with his brother up north and work this job. Donald Lake was 32 years old when Leonard picked him up on that day. It's believed that Donald was Leonard's first victim. Now, this was never conclusively proven. What we do know of the facts are this. They left on New Year's Day, 1983. Donald Lake was never seen again. Leonard began cashing his brother's Social Security checks and assumed his identity for various purposes. It's also known that his mother eventually files a missing person report on her son. Nothing ever comes of this, and that Leonard eventually forges a letter purportedly from Donald where he tells his mother and sisters that he has gone to Reno to live with some drug dealers, something that was out of character for Donald and immediately raised red flags for the family. However, they had no proof. There was nothing that they can do about any of this. But this does give us an idea as to where Leonard Lake's mindset was at this point in time, with the disillusion of his marriage to Cricket and the failings of many other relationships, that serious, strange, yet unthreatening mask that he had worn for so long is now beginning to slip away, and the wretched creature that lies beneath it is beginning to show its face to the world. So what did Leonard Lake do with his brother's ID? We know that he rented an apartment in San Francisco after moving out of his sister's house, and he registered in this apartment as Donald Lake. He also opened a P.O. box and joined a gentleman's club as his brother. And the purpose of joining this gentleman's club was simply to meet women who he could have sexual encounters with. Again, this is another shift in Leonard Lake's personality. Whereas before, he was content to play the long game with women in order to get what he wanted from them, he is no longer doing so. He's going to prostitutes, offering them drugs in exchange for sex, and now he's also keeping a journal. And this journal gives us an idea as to his mental spiral. In one journal entry, he states, quote, "Returned sister's car today, bust back. On the bus, I saw a young girl, 16, of uncommon beauty, with long styled hair, clear complexion, petite figure, and tasteful makeup. Ah, if I were only young and handsome." Further along, he puts 18th and Mission, food is plentiful and cheap, and the place is also a contact point with some dope-using whores. In another entry, he talks about going to meet up with an acquaintance who gave him oral sex, which he laments as the woman was quote-unquote stupid and ugly, finishing with what levels I have fallen to. Now, not long after that encounter, he makes another entry where he talks about going up to the cabin that Cricket and her father own, where he basically complains about what they have done to the cabin, and then speaks of his relationship with her, saying it could have been so nice if she hadn't valued money and security over love. Lake is still in love with Cricket, and some have speculated that the disillusionment of this marriage was really the tipping point for Leonard Lake. We've discussed this before. I know I've discussed it in an earlier episode of this series. Many serial killers, especially those who are what they term as late bloomers, there is a catalyst that occurs that pushes them from being a deeply disturbed individual into an active serial killer. And experts on this subject have postulated that Cricket leaving him, filing for divorce, was the catalyst that pushed Leonard Lake from being a law-breaking user of women into a full-blown serial killer, meaning that he always had the tendencies, it was always inside of him, but with the death of that marriage, it added that stressor fact to him that allowed him to break free of his bonds and move into that area where He could now do the things he had always dreamed about, but had never been able to carry out for whatever reason. In the case of Leonard Lake, I believe it's because he had access to the thing that he wanted most, which was his sexual escapades with women and the degradation of them in his mind by seeing them as only things that were to be conquered. Now that he has lost the person who has been described as his sexual equal, he is unhinged. There's nothing inhibiting him from going out and doing the things that he has desired for so long. We know that Lake began keeping in more regular contact with his mother, which is also a shift in his mental state, and could very well indicate that in his mind he saw the idea of mending this fence with his mother as a justification of what he was going to go on and do. And by that, I mean some serial killers, they have the strained relationship or no relationship with the most important woman in their life. And when they begin killing, oftentimes the person they are killing resembles the individual that hurt them. A perfect example is Ted Bundy. It's known that he had been in a serious relationship with a woman and that she had snubbed him and broken his heart, and that that was the catalyst for Bundy going on his killing spree, and that the majority of these victims looked like this woman. By repairing this relationship with his mother, mentally, Lake may have been preparing himself and finding a way to justify the actions he is about to undertake. I'm a good boy to my mom, so the fact that I'm killing all of these other women doesn't take away from that, because at least I'm good to my mother. It is a twisted bit of psychology, but it is very possible with an individual like Leonard Lake. Now, he's living in San Francisco, getting the disability checks from his brother, visiting prostitutes. I mentioned he had opened a P.O. box, and what Lake was doing with this P.O. box was using it to solicit women via the newspaper for photography sessions with the hope of having sexual encounters with them. A list that was discovered after his death indicates that Lake was at this stage seriously considering the things that he was going to go on and do. On this wish list, he puts down a video camera and editing equipment, along with an assault rifle, a 9mm Colt Commander, and an AR-7 22 caliber rifle. Why the video camera? Well, Lake is beginning to entertain the idea of videotaping his sexual encounters. And along with this line of thinking, we have the guns, because Lake is now really focusing on this idea of keeping a woman captive for the use of sexual gratification. We know in his journal he discusses leaving San Francisco and going back to the country, where he can set up a base of operations and construct his bunker. Where he also states that the purpose of this bunker, as well as of leaving the city, is so that he can be away from society and also have a steady supply of sexual partners. We know that Lake joined a dating service, and that it was his hope at this point in time that this dating service would supply him with a steady stream of these women. And through all of this, Leonard Lake is still in contact with Cricket. We know that they had intermittent sexual encounters and that Lake still pined for her. In a series of entries and letters that he sent to her, he spoke of her never having to worry and how she has his heart. So it's almost as though Leonard Lake is at war with himself. On one hand, he longs for this woman who was his equal, while on the other hand, his mind is continuing to spiral into darker and darker fantasies and thoughts. A journal entry from February 19th states, the collector, has it really been near 20 years I've carried this fantasy? And Miranda, how fitting. My lovely little prisoner of the future. I suppose in my way I am the same wimp as the hero, in my way just as crazy. I've no doubt we wimps have been compensating for our inability since the dawn of history. Sad reality. Still, how can we die if we never live? So Lake has all of this going on, dealings with Cricket, various sexual escapades, including himself and his family's lives. He's also going back up to the cabin owned by Cricket and her father with fairly increasing frequency, where Lake is doing improvements on the property. Later, a defense attorney for Charles Ng would say, there was a conspiracy in this case, but that conspiracy existed between Leonard Lake and his girlfriend, wife, ex-wife, girlfriend, Clara Lynn Balazs, a.k.a. Cricket, and no one else. The existence of the conspiracy is evidenced in Lake's diary. Cricket read the diary and knew of the Miranda Project as early as 1980. She also assisted Lake by recruiting potential female victims to be photographed under the ruse of betraying him as a professional photographer. Lake and Cricket created a homemade video of themselves in March 1983. It featured them cavorting nude on a bed, giggling, engaging in various sexual antics, and interspersing erotic conversations with plans to lure women into Lake's web. They are shown looking at photographs of women during a break in a sadomasochistic sex episode and joking about the women as potential victims of Miranda Project. Cricket knew Lake was a fugitive from the 1982 arrest. She knew Lake assumed the names of other persons and introduced him under a false name to numerous people. This is an aspect of the case that is oftentimes overlooked. There is a good deal of evidence to suggest that while she may not have known that he was committing the murders, Leonard Lake's ex-wife did in fact know what he was getting into in terms of his sexual fantasies and what it was that he planned to do. And later we're going to get into that more, but we do need to acknowledge that fact that she did know something. It's possible she knew everything. However, we cannot cast aspersions on her because we simply don't know. We know law enforcement believed that she knew much more than was let on, and that because of this, they seriously considered bringing charges against her. In her own words, she told police after all of this was done that the only thing she knew was that Leonard had a very active imagination and fantastical sex life, and that is that what she thought he was doing. After stating this to police, she promptly hired a lawyer and would eventually request immunity from everything from the police in return for answering any of their questions. So that does give us an idea that it's very possible she may have known more than was let on, and that it's also very possible and even probable that she may have known what Leonard was thinking even at this stage in the game. Now, be that as it may, Lake is going up to this cabin, spending his days in San Francisco, and frequently reaching out to his friend Charles. This is the individual, if you'll remember, who lives in Morgan Hill, whom Lake feels sorry for the wife of, as well as the daughters. Well, Charles has now divorced his wife, and the daughters are left with Charles, which is something that, for whatever reason, Leonard Lake does not like the idea of. And he's constantly trying to get his friend to go up to the cabin with him, but Charles keeps deferring on this. On March 31st, 1983, Leonard Lake wrote a entry in his journal that reads, "Once I had a wife, she was my connection to the world. Through her, I could love, trust, believe in things others are allowed to believe in. I could have died for her, killed for her, even gone to jail, given up my freedom in exchange for the security of her life. Once I had a wife. Now I have no ties to the world. I am both above it and removed from it. Oh, there are those I love, my sisters, even crickets still, but none of these bind me to the order of existence. I am free to die with no responsibility. All I love alone. Freedom, an empty privilege, still one I must bear with determination. Amusing, our land of the free is not prepared to deal effectively with a truly free man. What can they do to one who carries cyanide pills in his pocket, when death holds no fears, when there are no responsibilities beyond the next meal? Society, you're being socked and you don't understand by who or why. And if you did, you are powerless against one who is not afraid to die." We can see his mentality. There's that air of hopelessness, but also a determination to live life as he desires it. And it's because of this, Leonard Lake really starts looking at Charles Gunner. Much in the same way that he had looked at his brother Donald, because Charles is on Social Security. And by this point, Lake is growing fearful of having used his brother's identity for such a period of time when his family is aware that he had gone off with his older brother. So Lake comes up with something he calls Operation Fish, with fish meaning a orca or a beached whale, both terms that Charles Gunner had used to describe himself to Leonard Lake in the past. Entry reads, "On April 5th, 1985, left early for Calaveras with Charles. Arrived, completed trench for gas line, installed water filter, installed hot water pipes, made videotape of Charles. Operation Fish failed. Charles is simply too heavy to move. Sigh." Lake attempts to kill Charles over the next few weeks, which each of these operations failing, leading to Lake moving into the Gunner household, where Charles lives with his two stepdaughters. Lake pays Charles a month's rent in advance and really does everything that he can to ingratiate himself with the man and his stepdaughters. An entry from his journal while he was living with the Gunners states, "Charles whipped his oldest girl today. I've seen him hit his children before, but I've never seen him actually tear into one with a full force belt. I have fantasized about whipping a young woman before, but watching him whip a little girl was too much for me. He watches TV, has time to watch stupid comedy over and over, but nothing of any historical or educational worth. He has time to make a play for his favorite lady, time to yell at his children, time to sleep 12 to 14 hours a day, but no time at all to read, except comic books or the Sunday funnies.
He lives in a clean house only by virtue of the fact that his girls must do the cleaning. He sows not, nor does he labor. Oh, but he reaps gold in the form of government handouts. It's known that during this period of time, Lake met a woman who he convinced to pose for him, and who he tried to convince to have sex with him. She turned him down for this offer, as well as for offers of further pictures where she would put makeup on to look as though she were dead. And that eventually he contacts this woman and says that he has a girl with him who wants to have a threesome. He knows where she lives. This woman is obviously terrified over this prospect, as she's only had one encounter with Leonard Lake. And when she calls her boyfriend up, the man arrives at the house. Leonard Lake shows up with another woman by the name of Cricket. And the two of them are quickly forced from the property, and Leonard Lake has to abandon any idea that he may have of having this sexual encounter. The woman later stated that when Lake proposed this threesome to her on the phone, he was extremely demanding of her. Again, this is a shift in his personality. In late May, Charles is convinced to accompany Lake on a trip to either Tahoe or Salt Lake City under the pretenses of some rest and relaxation. He then convinces the young woman he had tried to get into a threesome with him to watch Charles's daughters for a period of 2 weeks. It is known that on May 24th, Leonard Lake put an entry in his journal that simply reads, Phase 1 of Fish Complete, finally. What happened is that Leonard Lake drove Charles up to this cabin in Calaveras County and murdered him there before burying his body. After this, Lake returns to the Morgan Hill area driving Charles Gunner's van and informs the babysitter that Charles had met a woman while they were on the road and would not be returning, and that he would look after the two girls until Charles sent for them. The young woman did not think anything odd of this, as the relationship between the two men and the two men in general were already very odd to her, so she leaves these girls in the care of Leonard Lake. A couple of things are known during this period of time. Leonard Lake took on Charles Gunner's persona in order to begin cashing his disability checks. He also wrote in his journal concerning Charles, Charles stayed up north, I have the children for a while, and went and met with Charles's ex-wife, Vicky. I say ex, they're still in the process of divorcing. And it's been postulated that Lake may have met with her because he feared that Vicky would get Charles's social security checks if the divorce were finalized. And Vicky stated to Leonard that the only way she would not proceed with the divorce proceedings was if Charles was dead. Lake then informs her that she doesn't have to worry about him ever coming back again, as he videotaped Charles beating one of the girls and had given the videotape to his sister. Vicky stated that this might be enough to keep Charles away for a short period of time, but eventually he would come back. Vicky would not take Charles Gunner's two daughters. Lake, again, he's assumed the personality and the life of Charles Gunner. He's taking care of these girls as best he can. And it was noted that
Lake actually seemed to take care of these girls as though they were his own. And eventually, through Vicky, Leonard Lake is able to get a friend of Charles by the name of Wes Blank to take care of the girls. This was under the pretense of Vicky being fearful of Charles. See, she had earlier in their relationship requested that Blank take custody of all of their children because of her fear of Gunner. Now that there is no one to look after the girls other than Leonard Lake, they appeal to him again and he acquiesces to their request, taking custody of the girls on June 13th. We're going to shift our focus now to look at Charles New for a period of time. While all of this is going on, Leonard Lake is committing his first known murders. Charles is in Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary. It's known that Lake and Charles kept tabs on one another through a series of correspondences. One of these letters contained photographs from Leonard Lake where it appears as though he is building a bunker out of cinder block. Although, at this point in time, it's unknown if Lake had confided in Charles his idea of holding women captive for sexual gratification. While he's in Leavenworth, he befriends various other incarcerated individuals, one of whom he shares a plan with to form a paramilitary organization with the idea of robbing banks and other valuable goods once they are released. The man stated that he eventually backed out of all this when Charles, quote, went from simple bank jobs to talking about stealing military missiles and shooting down 747s. This individual also stated that during the time that they were incarcerated together, Charles began talking about committing mass murder. In one scheme, he talked of his desire to blow up a bus station, but more than that, Ning confided to him that he had a desire to sexually torture women. We have to take this with a grain of salt, though, because this information was gleaned and came to the eyes of the authorities after what Lake and Ning did became known to the public. And it could simply have been an individual who was friends with Charles and had some form of contact, making the story of their relationship even spicier by adding in aspects of what Charles had actually done once he was released. And I say that because nowhere else do we see this kind of talk from Charles Noon. Not when he's in the military, not when he's on the lam from the law, nowhere other than when he gets into Leavenworth and is interacting with these individuals. And there are individuals who, after he gets out, stated that he told them similar things as well once he returned to California. Again, I believe that this is just spicing up storytelling in order to make your interactions with such an infamous individual that much more interesting. I say that because I know people that know Charles Ng personally, and by their own accounts, he is very reluctant to talk about his sexual desires, even with women, whom one of the individuals I know happens to be. It was also known that while he's incarcerated, Charles begins a relationship with a woman from Kentucky via mail. This woman's son had been murdered and she had also been sexually assaulted, which led to the disillusionment of her marriage. just a quick side note, some people hear that and are scratching their head as to how this could happen. Sometimes in a relationship such as a marriage, when a woman is sexually assaulted, the man, unable to cope with the gravity of the situation, as opposed to taking their anger out and aiming it toward the perpetrator, instead turns the anger that they have over what happened towards their spouse, and in fact blames them for it. And this is part of the mentality that also sees these women who have been sexually assaulted as having become unclean and therefore unworthy to them. It has been speculated that this relationship that Charles had with this individual may have been the cataclysm that pushed him to the point where he was willing to actually commit murder. We're jumping a little bit ahead here. When Lake gets out of prison, he's going to spend time with one individual he had met while he was incarcerated, informing the man that he is going to reunite with Leonard Lake. He then makes contact with this woman who is quite a bit older than Charles, and the next day they have a sexual encounter. After this encounter, the woman, realizing that there is no hope for a relationship between them, informs Charles that it would be best for the both of them if they went their own separate ways. And this apparently had a pretty devastating effect on Charles Nung. Now, back to Leonard Lake. Charles Gunnar is gone. The girls are now in the custody of someone else. He is looking to move to the cabin up in Wileyville full time. During this period, he meets a neighbor of Charles Gunnar, and they begin a relationship. And it shows the duality of Leonard Lake's brain when he writes about her in his journal. He states, "A woman is only a woman, but every now and then a lady comes into my life that I know. It matters not that I never met her before today. I know her. I can feel for her, can look into her mind and her heart. Why on my last day here do I have to meet her? Why not the first? Like Cricket, like Rhonda, she is lovely, petite, warm, tender, easy to get to know, a person I feel comfortable with. If she gives me the slightest chance, I'll fall in love with her. Doris, good night." Lake is going to spend the next few days bouncing between Morgan Hill and a small town called Myers Flat. And each time he goes back to Morgan Hill, he continues this relationship with this woman. When he finally settles into the cabin in Myers Flat, Cricket is with him. They continue with their various dalliances, and according to Lake, he informs Cricket of this woman he has met in Morgan Hill, which Cricket has no qualms with. Now, not long after Cricket returns to the Bay Area, this woman by the name of Doris comes up to the cabin, bringing with her one of her daughters. It's known that during this visit, Lake confided in her that he was a fugitive, that he was stockpiling food and weapons, that in 2 years his fugitive status would no longer matter as it would have expired due to the statute of limitations, and that Doris saw massive amounts of weapons inside of the cabin, and that her daughter had unintentionally placed a pornographic movie that Lake had made of a woman inside of a bathroom into the VCR. And this shocked both the woman and her daughter, and Lake very quickly ejected the tape without a word or an explanation and put in a children's movie. Not long after this, Doris went back to Morgan Hill uncertain as to whether or not she should continue her relationship with Leonard Lake. After Doris and her daughter leaves, Leonard Lake's half-sister Janet comes to visit Meyer's flat, and while there, she sees a collage of nude women on the inside closet door in Lake's bedroom, but also sees the massive amount of weaponry that he is stockpiling and learns that he is carrying cyanide pills with him at all times. Before she leaves, Leonard gives Janet a packet, which he explains contains maps as well as photographs to where Leonard has buried various valuables. And he instructs her to give this packet to Cricket, and that Cricket should only use it in the case of dire emergencies. Lake's life over the next few months is this. He spends some time with Doris, he spends some time with Cricket, he varies various supplies, like food and medicine, around this piece of property. He's looking for an area where he can construct his bunker. He is going to the Bay Area to sell drugs and continuing his correspondence with Charles Noon. It's known that as he's at this cabin in Meyer's flat, Lake begins rudimentary excavating a hillside near the cabin. Although, eventually he decides that this is not going to work for him, and after talking with Cricket, he decides to move everything further north to the cabin in Wileysville in Calaveras County. This takes place in October. Once he's ensconced in the cabin in Wileysville, Lake starts putting up wanted ads on local bulletin boards, and he gets a few women who respond to it, but all of them are quote-unquote below Lake's standards, and while he will take some photographs of these women, they really aren't what it is that he's looking for. He notes that most of these women are quote-unquote useless. As this is going on, he settles into a routine where he spends his weekends with Cricket. The week he spends working on the cabin and preparing his doomsday scenario. He eventually turns and rents a backhoe where he begins excavating the hillside 15 yards from the house. Now, obviously, Cricket is aware that Lake is building this bunker on her father's property, and we can't say with absolute certainty whether or not Cricket was aware of what he planned to use this bunker for. Again, I mentioned this earlier in the episode, law enforcement certainly believed that Cricket knew what Lake planned on doing, if not believed that he was actually going to carry it out. So he's slowly building this bunker. He is spending more and more time by himself, with the exception of an occasional female visitor, and he's growing more and more paranoid. He starts getting letters from the Social Security Administration wanting information about Charles Gunner, which Lake is obviously unable to provide. In addition to this, he notes in the first week in December that sheriff's officers had been watching him when he went into the actual town of Wileysville, something that greatly unnerved Leonard Lake, but not enough to deter him from continuing his plans. Lake hires a 15-year-old from a newspaper ad that he had placed to come up and work at the cabin. Then Lake's wallet goes missing, and this infuriates Lake. He decides that he's going to go to this young boy's house and discover if what he suspects is true, When the boy and his family is out, Lake carries it out and discovers his wallet inside of Randy's bedroom with all of the important things missing. Lake then leaves this wallet there, and 2 days after Christmas, on December 27th, he lures Randy up to his cabin where he interrogates him. In his journal, he writes, "Got Randy over here, videotaped interrogation, full confession, got wallet back and cards, he either destroyed or lost the ID, great, he'll work off the stolen cash." Now, this boy would later tell authorities, as well as journalists, that he took the wallet because the man he knew as Charles Gunner owed him $80 for work that he'd completed, although he was never paid for. Again, this is coming from the boy's version of events. He states that Lake had approached his mother and said that he believed her son may have stolen his wallet, and that the mother had in fact allowed Lake to come into the bedroom where he discovered his property sitting in the trash can. This young man stated that the interrogation and everything else that Lake wrote down in his journal was in fact true, and that the money he had taken from Lake's wallet had been used by his mother to buy crank. He also stated that while he was working off paying the debt to Gunner off, he noticed Cricket coming with young girls to the house. He put their ages about 16 or 17. Lake also showed this boy videotapes of many of these young girls inside of the cabin changing clothing into outfits that Lake had put together for them so that he could photograph them. And this young boy realized very quickly that these girls were being videotaped without their knowledge. Again, according to this boy, while he was under the employment of Leonard Lake, Lake showed him hundreds of videotapes in the cabin and informed him that he could borrow any of them if he wanted. The boy saw many videotapes bearing familiar movie names and agreed to take some of the tapes home, only to discover that they were pornographic movies starring Leonard Lake and various women. This boy stated that when he returned the next day and returned the videotape, Lake was absolutely furious with him and did not believe him when the boy stated that he had mistakenly taken the tape as he believed it was a well-known popular movie. Moving into 1984, Lake continues working on building the bunker with the help of this youth and another local teenager. He also continues with his various sexual conquests. In his journal, he writes, "While I enjoy company, I don't want an independent guest or girlfriend around for too long or too often. I enjoy quiet, not having to entertain or clean up after others. People around seem to get in the way, get into things, attempt to change things. When Miranda arrives, she'll be on a strictly helpmate basis. She'll be around when I need help, do what she's told, and go to her room when I'm finished with her. Lately, life seems to be too often a beauty contest. The prettiest girl gets the job, the most opportunity. The richest man, the best-looking man, gets the same. People help out the person with the best smile, nicest personality, etc. Completely understandable, but us not-so-great-looking types frequently take second or third best at everything. I live to correct this." It's known that he considered performing an armed robbery in the Bay Area, but turned away from this as it was too risky, and instead went to work for the company that Cricket worked for a period of 5 days, after which he returned to Wileysville and continued working on the construction of the bunker. It's known that he began looking at past sexual conquests of his as potential victims for what he had come to refer to as Operation Miranda. which is where this series gets its name from. It's interesting to note that when the police finally became aware of what was taking place in Wileysville, they were unable to determine where Lake had gotten the name Operation Miranda from. Many of them thought that he took the name from a small town near Myers Flats named Miranda. Eventually, though, they would learn that he had taken this name from the book The Collector, as Miranda was the name of the young woman whom the main character holds prisoner in an effort to make her love him. Where Leonard Lake vastly differs from the character in that book is he had no interest in making the women that he is going to take captive love him. He simply wants to use them for his own gratification before getting rid of them. And now that he has this property in Wileysville, the construction of the bunker is going on, and he is in fact building a secret room inside of it in which to house his victims. Leonard Lake can see his plans and his fantasies coalescing into one and becoming a reality in the not-too-distant future. It is also known that during this period of time, we're talking February, April, May, Lake ends up having a sexual encounter with a man he met through a personal ad in San Francisco. Quote, went over to his house to case the place, nothing of immediate grabbable value, so I let him give me head, surprisingly very good, slow and deep as I like it. Still very strange having a man do it, no reciprocation, of course, with a little work I might be able to pass for him, considered a fish-like operation. Lake actually goes so far as to make plans to murder this man on the weekend of March 16th to the 18th. However, this man, for whatever reason, decides to abort their planned meeting at the cabin in Wileysville. Lake's journal entries from this period of time are really filled with woe is me tales of he's got to go to work and do actual labor as opposed to simply selling drugs for his cash. The fact that his schemes with the Social Security Administration have dried up and his plans to acquire new identification are failing. He also writes that many of the conquests he is attempting to undertake are not turning out the ways that he expects them. A dog that he has gotten ends up having sex with a neighbor's animal, and Lake, in a fit of rage, shoots this person's dog dead on his property. Something that Lake, again, laments as being a stroke of bad luck and just another sign that the world is turning on him. Lake ends up befriending the people who own the dog, and it's known that they exchanged pornographic tapes with one another. We're going to switch back for the end of this episode to discuss Charles Nung. He ends up being discharged from prison on June 29th, 1984. After leaving, as I stated earlier, he heads to Oklahoma, where he meets up with an individual he had met while he was in prison before heading to Kansas, where he has this sexual encounter with the woman that he had befriended while he was in prison. After this, Charles Nung gets on a plane bound for California and is picked up at the San Francisco airport by Cricket, who then delivers him to Leonard Lake. And this is the beginning of what they describe in serial killer couples as a duality. many people believe that Leonard Lake controlled Charles Ng. In fact, there is ample evidence to suggest this. People who witnessed the two of them together often mention that Lake spoke to Charles in a berating, derogatory manner the majority of the time, and that rather than rebel against this type of behavior and treatment, Charles simply took it and did as the man instructed. Charles himself has stated that he looked to Leonard Lake as a surrogate father figure. Having said all of that, what is going to come in the next episode does not excuse Charles Ng's culpability and responsibility for the crimes in which he participated. With that being said, there is the possibility that he did not understand completely the reality of what he and Leonard Lake had discussed during their prior relationship, i.e. that Lake fully intended to carry out these murders. We know of two murders that Leonard Lake committed. There is another and suspected murder that Lake may have been involved with, and I say that it's suspected because despite the fact that any website you look on is going to list this individual as a victim of Lake and Ng, no hard concrete evidence that I am aware of has ever been presented to definitively link this individual's disappearance to Leonard Lake. And that would be 30-year-old Jeffrey D. Askren of Sunnyvale, who disappeared in April of 1984. And the reason it's suspected he is a victim of Leonard Lake is simply because his vehicle, a late model Honda, was found a few miles away from Leonard Lake's cabin in Wileysville a few days after this individual disappeared. Some people assert that there is evidence that proves that this individual was in fact a victim of Leonard Lake. I have not seen anything to convince me of this, and by convince me of it, I have seen no court documents or evidence that definitively states that Leonard Lake was responsible for this murder. However, it is highly possible and probable that Lake, given what we know about him and his activities prior to Charles reuniting with him in June, was responsible for this crime. I am going to end the episode here, my Deathcasters and Deathcasterettes. I hope you have enjoyed this early access episode. Until next time, stay morbid.